Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome to Education America, where we are working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. Join the conversation. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as the 16th President Abraham Lincoln succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. And boy, how true that is. Mm-hmm. Abigail, it's so great to be with you again in studio.
It's good
and
to be here.
It's been a wonderful couple of weeks here, lots of snow in Minnesota. And we're looking forward to welcoming our guest.
Absolutely.
I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce him.
Tonight we have invited Mr. Ken Pope, who is the CEO of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. The foundation was established to educate America's rising generations about communism. Education is at the heart of the foundation. In fact, their mission is to educate future generations about the ideology, history, and legacy of communism. On this front, the foundation recently opened the Victims of Communism Museum out in Washington, D.C., this past summer, and are about to launch their first digital curriculum on communism, a history of repression, violence, and victims. Mr. Ken Pope is the CEO of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Previously, he had a 34-year career in the U.S. Army, consulting industry and academia, serving Europe, the Middle East, and Central America. Ken has had over 12 years of operational fieldwork as an Army FAO with a focus on Russia and various areas in the overseas, and the along with security issues with assignments in Russia, Ukraine, Estonia, Azerbaijan, and numerous other locations. Ken has also served as an assistant professor at the Center for Intelligence and Security Studies at the University of Mississippi, where he taught courses on intelligence, advanced analytics, senior capstone program, and led the center's national security simulations. We are so thankful to welcome him in studio today.
Mm-hmm. So Ken, 34-year career in the U.S. Army is really astounding. And I think I said to you before we went on air, we're grateful for your service to this country. And I just want to say it publicly as well. Thank you so much for your service to this country.
Well, thank you very much. Just a quick correction on that. So it was 23 years career in the Army, and the rest of it was consulting in academia.
Oh, okay. Okay. Our person got that incorrect. Sorry about that. But still, 23 years is still nothing to to write or is something to write home about. It's pretty amazing. So we're very, very grateful to have you on and for your continued commitment to serving your country and those who have perished from communism. So before we talk too much about the museum itself, let's talk a little bit about what communism is itself. You know, so many people will say, oh, you know, if you say that something is communist, you're being, you know, kind of extreme and you're not really describing things accurately. And people associate it with these extreme things that happened in China and in Russia and what have you. But unfortunately, they think, oh, nothing like that could happen again now. And so when you use the word communism, people tend to think you're an extremist. And yet we really are seeing a lot of signs of communism rearing its ugly head again. And so I think it's important for our listeners to know what communism is itself, and talk a little bit about what it is for us.
Okay, yeah. I'll give you how we refer to it here at the foundation, at the museum, and how we talk about it when we're teaching or giving tours of the museum. Mm-hmm. So for us, communism is a totalitarian system of government in which you have a single party, the authoritarian state, mm-hmm. and it eliminates all private property. It owns and controls everything, the means of production. That's one of the things you always hear when you talk about Marx. Mm-hmm. It's the final stage of society in Marxist theory, just after socialism, in which the state, they profess, is going to wither away, and all the economic goods are going to be distributed equitably across the land. Mm-hmm. Never happened anywhere it's ever been tried.
Right. Well, when you stop and think about it, I mean, it's absurd to think that a state is going to completely wither away, and that people right. who are human and at the core sinful are going to somehow just make sure that everything is equal. It's an impossible notion.
It really is. And I mean, and when people argue about it, they want to argue that capitalism and democracy are real systems, real form of government, and they're in place and they're functioning. Flawed, granted, and they're open for critique. But communism is really not a real system. It's never been instituted as a reality. It's utopian, so it's never really been achieved. Right. The best way to think of it is really a myth. It's never been what they've said it's going to be. Mm-hmm. It provided a lot of other things, a lot of death, misery, and destruction, mm-hmm. but never really this utopia, this paradise on earth without God, which they were trying to sell, mm-hmm. That never worked.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, I love that you call it a utopian ideal, because that's really what it is. And unfortunately, what we hear from various groups that are proponents of socialism and ultimately communism, but they won't typically use that term, is that they'll say, well, in the previous times, they didn't do it quite right. And if we do it just right, then it's going to work. And, you know, you point to Venezuela or some of these other failed systems more recently. And they'll say, well, no, that's not exactly what we're asking to do. Their situation was different because of XYZ. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you address that with our culture today when people say things like that?
Well, I just tell them that, you know, you hear that argument quite a bit. Well, it was not done right, or mm-hmm. it was not done how as you know, Marx or the fathers of the theory intended. And I argue that that's completely incorrect. It was done exactly as they envisioned and intended. They did pretty much every country you've looked at. They've done the same core things mm-hmm. that Marx said you had to do to achieve communism. And in every case, it broke the system. Mm-hmm. Everything completely shut down. Because you have to remember what Marx said in his theory. He's out to destroy everything associated with the old and usher in this new. Mm-hmm. And the new is, you know, is something that never works, and you never get to this idyllic system, this utopian system that he envisioned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting, isn't it, that he would go to his grave still thinking that this was maybe going to work and happen, and then there are still people, these prophets. It's almost as though it's the people, like you said earlier in your conversation, you said something about the fact that this was to show that you could do a godless society. And it seems that that is what perpetuates people's belief in this, is that they don't want to believe in a God. So this is a way for them to have an alternative and still pat themselves on the back, maybe. I'm not sure.
I think that's an excellent point, and one that I was going to try to cover when we're here. So if you think about what they were after, communism seeks again to destroy all aspects of what Marx called at the time this bourgeois society. And he said it was going to only be done through violence and revolution. Yeah. So, again, destroying that old system to create the new system. And the first thing that had to go, as you highlighted, is God and religion.
Yeah.
Well, unlike U.S. form of government, we recognize in our founding documents that our rights come from our Creator, from God. Mm-hmm. And those are enshrined in our Bill of Rights. When it boils down to it, in essence, that tells people in the U.S. what the government cannot do to them. Mm-hmm. And Marx and Lenin, they flipped it on their heads, right? So they there is no God, so therefore all rights come from the communist government, the state, and it always devolves into some great dictator or leader that becomes the God, and the communist theology, or the ideology rather, becomes the new theology, the new religion of the system. And that's what we have, these problems. That's the only way this thing can be created. And the guys, even, I mean, some of the latter elements of communist society in the Soviet Union, they even created their own Ten Commandments. You know, really a cynical, you know, view of how we view that, you know, our, as a Christian, we view our Ten Commandments.
Really? I did not. I wasn't aware of that. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I want to make sure that we give you the opportunity to also briefly just introduce the museum. We'll talk about that the second half as well. But one of the things that you meant, or that we found out in doing some research or maybe talking to you beforehand, is that this Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation was actually authorized way back in 1993 by a unanimous act of Congress signed as public law by the President William Clinton at the time. And then there was a dedicated memorial statue by George W. Bush in 2007. I found this stunning that this was an act of Congress. And here we have now a Congress that is actually
trying to... I'm not sure that bill would have passed anymore.
I don't think that would... I definitely don't think that would pass today. Absolutely not. But tell us, you know, what you would say about education, human rights, research, the memorial, and the museum. You know, how in the world was this authorized in the first place? And then why does it seem like it maybe sat quietly until just recently? You know, we're only hearing about this now.
Right. I agree with you 100%. I always make that kind of that joke when I'm giving a, you know, talk about the foundation of the museum, is that, yeah, authorized by unanimous act of Congress. Think about that, you know, anything trying to be, anything they could possibly think of in this Congress today that being a unanimous act.
Right.
But back then it was a unique time. So just, you know, we had had the collapse of the Soviet Union. You know, you had the Berlin Wall comes down in 89. These countries that are the satellite states of the Soviet Union start disappearing. And then you have the collapse of the Soviet Union itself in 91. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the elders of this program, the foundation, they decided, let's try to get, you know, a monument to these over 100 million victims of people killed by the communist regimes around the world, and the 1.5 billion who are still under that system. Let's do a monument for them. And that was the initial goal. And then our founder, Lee Edwards, was at brunch shortly after the dedication in 2007. And he and his wife, they kind of sketched out on a napkin at the restaurant, hey, let's do a museum. And it took, you know, it's funded. We're privately funded. So it took, you know, quite some time to, you know, find the property, you know, build the museum out and then go forward. But, you know, now we are, museum's up and running as part of our education program. So we have, again, I think you hit the key elements of what we do, education, human rights, and research. So education, you know, multifaceted, you know, along with the museum, we have curriculum. We teach teachers how to teach about the topic of communism. We do what we call a witness project. We highlight those not only victims, but really heroes, people who have suffered under communism, made the escape, or, you know, or become free. And then we, you know, capture their story. We have a speakers bureau that has both academics that talk about the topic of communism and the various elements of it, but also those victims as well. We go out to different places, schools, universities, you know, public groups, civic groups, and we'll talk to anybody about it. And we also do human rights today, mainly focused on the victims of past regimes, but, you know, more recently and a lot stronger today is focusing on this incredibly violent, repressive regime in China today that, you know, does the genocide against the Uyghurs. You saw what happened in Hong Kong.
Yes.
There's so many horrible examples. And then the research, our key research area again is China. We do a lot of work on that, again, focusing on the genocide, the concentration camps, organ harvesting. And this, we've recently released this Xinjiang police file. We didn't do the hacking, but somebody hacked the police, state police in that region, and exfiltrated all their files, I mean, terabytes of data to us. And we're still going through it and publishing that information and testifying about it. And that's where we are today. That's what we do. And we're, you know, continuing to push on all these programs, because the education that you hit on at the beginning of the show is that so few people really understand what this thing is really all about and how horrible really is.
Mm-hmm. And really how by the time so many people in those countries really understood the horrors of what was happening, there were so many systems already in place that it was very hard at that point to stop what had already been set up. And I think we're looking around, you know, Rebecca Hagstrom has founded Liberty Classical Academy here. It's a classical school here in Minnesota. So that's her day job when she's not moonlighting here with me. And it has an excellent history program. I actually just sneak into the classrooms and just listen and take notes in the back. But what is shocking to all of us is seeing how, you know, yes, our students are have the benefit of excellent teachers who really teach about these subjects in depth. But so many have no idea, have no idea that the breadth and the depth of the horrors of communism. And so I think that it is amazing what you're doing. I've looked at the museum online and I'm already trying to figure out a way to come and visit you all in DC. I have four little kids and I'm going, okay, how can I sneak away and get on the plane? This looks amazing. But more than that, the education that you all are doing to help people see it's time to wake up now and realize that these things are still happening.
Absolutely. Well, you are listening to Education America on AM 1280 The Patriot, and we are joined with Ken Pope, the CEO of the Victims of Communist Memorial Foundation in Washington, D.C., and it was established to educate America's rising generations about communism. So we're talking a little bit about the museum. I do want to pop back and also talk a little bit more about communism itself. I realize that I was eager to talk about some things that were on my mind, but there are some really good questions that we want to ask you that may help others understand things a little bit more. What would you say are the main tenets of communism? And then what does that look like in practice? I think we can all say it probably started with Lenin and Stalin and Marx, right? But is that what you would say? Did it start with Karl Marx?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's always some debate about, you know, who actually coined the term and where it plays. So a lot of people think, well, communism started in Russia, but really it started in Western Europe, and it started in academic circles.
The Germans.
Come as no anybody. Where all these great bad ideas, you know, originally take place. But yes, it started, you know, we give Marx the credit because he published the manifesto. And really the interesting thing, you know, talking about the tenets of communism, what's really interesting about it is he, just like I told you earlier, we have our Bill of Rights, those first 10 amendments of our Constitution. Again, these guys are not really very original. So Marx created in his manifesto that I encourage everybody to read, not as a how-to, but as a warning of what, you know, of what you, this can really, you can really face when you try to go down this path. So he described 10 measures you have to come up with. We talked about, you know, earlier that you've got to destroy God. That's like a prerequisite before you get to the 10 measures. And when I had these discussions with some people who, you know, seem to, you know, be kind of enamored with the topic, as you go down these 10 measures individually, the first couple, they're all on board with because they're young usually and they don't really have anything, so it sounds okay. So the first one he talks about is abolition of property. So nobody has private property anymore. You know, kids can get on board with that. Then number two, you get a progressive and graduated income tax, very heavy tax. And where they really start to fall off is abolition of all rights of inheritance. So the kid who thought, I'm getting mom and dad's money, cars, house, when they go, guess what? You're not. Then it comes down to confiscation of all property. It starts with immigrants and rebels, as they call them, but then it goes into everything. Centralization of all credit in the hands of the state, so they control all the money. Again, if any of these things are sounding familiar, you're seeing those today, don't think, you know, we Americans are very arrogant. We think none of these bad things can happen because we're smarter than everybody else. Everybody who suffered under the system thought probably exactly the same thing before it went bad. Then it goes into centralization of means of communication. Think of that as getting around, but also today the modern methods of how we communicate, you know, via internet and communication writ large. Everything owned by the state, production owned by the state. And this is one where you really lose all the kids. Equal liability of all to work and not where you want, where you're told.
You'll work, you'll do trash pickup. You're not going to do you're not going to do finger painting or watercolors. You're going to go sort the trash.
Yeah, and if you, like I tell these guys that, you know, if you're in the party, great, but if you run afoul of them somehow, and you say you're a brilliant engineer, you thought you're going to work in D.C. or L.A. or Chicago doing this great job. Well, you're probably going to be harvesting wheat on some collective farm in Kansas. And the last two is distribution of population over the country. So they tell you where you're going to live based on the needs of the nation, not what you want. And then it's the, they call it free education of all children, but it's really not teaching the kids how to think, but what to think.
Yeah.
And that, those are the key elements. And everywhere, again, everywhere it's been tried, this was the ideology that started the foundation. Lenin used it, he amplified it, and it just, it went horribly, horribly wrong, but predictably wrong. You know, it, again, if we, you understand anything about human nature, people are not going to do well under this system.
No, and they never do. That's good. So what would you say in terms of the history? We know some of the crimes of communism, you know, have was, you know, throughout the revolution. But there was other, there are other crimes of communism, and maybe you could address the past crimes, but then also the current crimes that we are now seeing under the communist regimes.
Yeah, I think just if you go across the board, you know, what are you going to see as you go down this system? So I think it's important to talk about the characteristics of each of these systems too. And political philosopher Hannah Arendt really kind of nailed it really well. It's, you know, six things. It's an official ideology, one party, authoritarian state, only one, monopoly on all forms of violence. So think about your Second Amendment piece, control of all information to include mass media. I mean, everything that, you know, makes a noise or goes anywhere provides information across. It's under the state's control. Planned economy, centrally controlled. And the key one to keep it all together is a Communist Party-controlled terroristic security service that does just that, terrorizes people to keep them in line. So what are the crimes? So it's just from the very beginning with a system like that, you can just see flagrant human rights abuses. It's it's, if you go down the kind of list of how it started, it's first of all, people are denounced because they're not following along the lines. They lose their jobs. They have their resources confiscated, their homes, their houses. They're homeless at that point. They're denied medical care, education for their kids. And that's, so we think the cancel culture is something we invented. Not really. That started way back when, a little more robust back then. And it gets into extrajudicial killings. Then it goes into mass murder. Then it's just mass death due to this gross incompetence of the system. And then all along with the false imprisonment, the denial of just basic human rights, speech, religion, you know, right of assembly and all that. It all goes away.
And we see so many signs of this, not to the same level of extreme in the U.S., but we see signs of it here. But you referenced China, and, you know, I think that it would be good for you to take some time to talk about how that's playing out in China.
Yeah, so China is a, I mean, just a horrible example of what, you know, communism really on steroids. And I think the steroids are, you know, is the West enabling it.
Yes.
You know, we talk about, well, why is China this way? Well, because we buy all their stuff.
Yeah.
We kowtow to whatever they really want us to do. If you think about all the corporations that are, you know, I like to say in bed with these guys, and they, clearly they are. You know, some of the most egregious are the NBA and others. But, you know, look at the things that they do. So we know they're running concentration camps with the Uyghurs. They're forcing sterilization. They're executing people, unlawful imprisonments, death by organ harvesting. This is a, something that we're still trying to research. We had one of our researchers found something that, and again, we just need to find out if it's, you know, run it completely to ground. But it's that China is the only country in the, on the planet that if you have enough money, you can schedule your own organ transplant. Now, think about what that, the implications of that and how bad that is. You know, if you have to get on the waiting list until the right donor there, you can, they're, again, taking people who they consider undesirable, and they're using their bodies as a resource.
Unbelievable.
And that is the communist system.
Sickening.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Horrible. And we, you know, we have businesses. You know, think about some of the big name businesses that are over there doing business with them. And then on the same token, they're lecturing people in the U.S. about how, you know, the rest of us here about how we should act.
Yeah.
It's offensive.
Yeah. Well, and it's so contradictory. I mean, they're obviously just saying what is convenient here and then going, it's almost like, you know, look over here. And so that we're not actually looking where we should be looking to what they're really doing behind the scenes. It's just disgusting. Well, with your Communism Museum, you had mentioned the three focuses, which are really education, human rights, and research. When I'm assuming it's open during the weekdays or weekends in Washington, D.C., where in is it in Washington, D.C. proper? Is it in Virginia? Maybe you can tell us kind of a little bit more about the museum here in our final couple of minutes.
Sure. So the museum, yes, it is located about two blocks from the White House. So it's in Paul McPherson Square. Okay. The address is 900 15th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. And we are open Monday through Friday, 9 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We're probably going to change that, and we're probably going to close one day during the week so we can open on the weekends, probably a Tuesday, and then open Saturday in lieu
That's
of that.
Yeah.
We'll get that a little bit later on in the year. Entry is free. You can book a space online, or you can just do a walk-in. We welcome everybody who wants to come in. There's, again, no charge. We do request or suggest a $10 donation if you want to support the museum. Of course, if people want to give a lot more, we'd love that too.
Right.
Yes.
I'm sure that's for sure. And then you had talked about the fact that you're working on curriculum, and we're going to talk about that in the next show. But are there other plans kind of in the next stage for the museum, plans for digital or physical expansion at all?
Right. So we describe the museum. This is phase one, so it's kind of a boutique museum. It's small. It's not huge. We have three permanent galleries, and then on the first floor, the second floor, we have a temporary exhibit space with rotating exhibits. We had a Tiananmen Square that just left, and we're bringing in one on Cuba in about a week. Hmm. And so that's always rotating every couple months. Okay. And then we have the three galleries down on the first floor. It's takes you from the beginning of the story, from where it started with Marx, all the way through current day China. Hmm. We tell the stories in there. We also have some event space up there where we do lectures and the like. So we have a good program, but we're going to be expanding it in phase two, is a digital museum plus, we have a vision that we're trying to work through now of expanding the current space. We have space for probably a couple more galleries that we want to explore, building over the next year or so. And then phase three is going to take a huge investment, across the board, but we're looking to create a museum on par with the Holocaust Museum, about the same size.
Oh, wow. That would be great.
As horrible and tragic as the Holocaust was, we were talking about probably 11 million people. When you think about the victims of communism, we're talking, 10 times that number. Mm-hmm. And we just feel that, just like the people who suffered on the horrors of the Holocaust, the people who suffered on the horrors of the communist regimes need to have their story told, completely. We really want to do that.
Yeah.
So we need a much bigger space in order to do it.
That's great. Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. Okay. Well, go ahead, Abigail.
Well, and Mr. Pope, we are wrapping up our time here on this show. So everyone, we hope that you enjoyed listening to Mr. Ken Pope, learning about the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. You can listen to us on anywhere there are podcasts, at Education America, also at savetheclassroom.com or at AM 1280, The Patriot. Have a good night, everyone.
See you next week.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.